Welcome to the Rail Market Update on the State of Freight podcast, brought to you by FTR, where we share timely transportation intelligence with you on a weekly basis. The Rail Market Update is hosted by FTR's Vice President of Rail and Intermodal, Todd Tranowski. As Todd presents the information in the podcast, you can follow along and review the graphs and indicators by downloading a PDF or PowerPoint version of the presentation from our podcast landing page. A link to the PDF is available now at www.ftrintel.com/podcast. From there, you can also find past episodes and downloads of the Rail Market Update, as well as the weekly Trucking Market Update with Avery Weiss and much more. That link again is www.ftrintel.com/podcast.
Hello and welcome to the FTR State of Freight Rail Market Update podcast. As always, I am your host, Todd Tranowski, the Vice President of Rail and Intermodal here at FTR. Thank you for joining us this week and every week. Want to remind everybody that coming up this September, we'll be back in person at the Crown Plaza Union Station in downtown Indianapolis for our annual transportation conference. It promises to be 4 days of great fun talking about the transportation industry, talking about what's going on and what to expect in the road ahead. We have great days planned for you. The site is live, ftrconference.com. Go out there and reach out, learn all about the great speakers we're going to have for you, the varying days that are out there. We spread folks out this year. It's a four-day event, Tuesday to Friday. That's different than in the past. It used to be a three-day event, Tuesday to Thursday. So just mentally prepare yourself for that. Mentally think about that and how you want to plan to be there. We have the truck and trailer equipment space. We have truck freight. We have rail freight. We have rail equipment. It will be a time you do not want to miss this September in Indianapolis at the Crown Plaza Union Station. We already have registrations flowing in, so be sure to get there early. Be sure to make your reservations so that you can have a seat at the table as those presentations and discussions are going on. Also, I want to say a quick thank you to the presenting sponsor, the title sponsor of our Rail Freight Day, our good friends over at Rail State that are looking to do some very interesting things in the shipping technology and the shipping visibility arena. Do reach out to them at railstate.com to see what they're up to and get a little bit more information about all the things that they're doing, all things that they do, and how they may be able to help serve your business going forward, providing you with some additional visibility into your freight shipments and into overall capacity along the rail network. But let's jump in and let's talk about where things are this week. Well, the carload market's not a lot's changed. We're still sort of in this status quo report where the volumes are mixed, second quarter just sort of dragging on without a whole lot of change. Intermodal is very interesting. Intermodal is quite frankly fascinating at the moment when you look at it and you look at what's gone on. In March, we had a huge unexpected increase in international volume and what that means. And domestic sort of underperformed. Well, if you dig into the numbers a little bit further, what you'll see is that in that same time period, Canadian intermodal volumes increased dramatically while U.S. volumes remained fairly flat. So what that tells us is that the increase in international shipments is really a mix shift. As folks bring more goods into Western Canada, there isn't the same transloading infrastructure that exists on, say, Southern California on the West Coast, where you can easily and efficiently transload those goods from a 40-foot international box to a 53-foot domestic box. You sort of have to bring it in intact into the middle part of the country. Now, certainly Western Canada is working to add more transloading capacity, but it isn't and probably never will be quite as extensive as it is in Southern California. And so if you see a dramatic shift like that in Canadian volumes, that helps explain why international outperformed in March and in April and provides a little bit further insight into what we're seeing in intermodal. Certainly on a North American basis, you look at it and you say, it's pretty flat. In fact, over the last month, you would look at it and say, Todd, it's a dead cardiac patient. It really is a pretty flat line over the last month. But it's a flat line at a strong level. It's a flat line above the five-year average. It's certainly not at last year's levels, but certainly well above the five-year average. And if you look further out, you can see that we get a little bit of help over the next month. The comparisons ease dramatically as we get into June and then July. And so even if we hold these levels in overall intermodal, we're going to see the year-over-year comparison turn positive. Now, Canada's growth, dramatic over the last month or so, two months or so. The U.S. volumes have basically treaded water, basically held firm, and Mexican volumes have declined. So overall, when you sum that all up for an overall North American number, you can see the line doesn't move a whole lot. We just sort of hold our ground just above 360,000 or so carloads a week. Now, looking down into the splits a little bit further, when you look in the domestic side, when you look on the trailer side, the trailer market had a significant decline starting in the end of the first quarter all the way through about the midpoint or so of the second quarter. It declined pretty significantly and pretty consistently. And folks were starting to speculate, starting to talk about, is this the death of the trailer market? Are we seeing the beginnings of what we saw in Canada, where 8 to 10 to 12 years ago, it very quickly trailers evaporated from the Canadian marketplace. And now there are essentially zero moving today, and that's where it's been for the last, really, 8 years up there north of the border. People were saying, is that where we're headed in the U.S.? And what we're seeing now is no. We're seeing that, yes, volumes are at low levels. Yes, they're below the five-year average. Yes, they're right around 18,000 carloads a week, but they're not continuing to decline. We're not continuing to move weaker. We're not going down to 14, 12,000 trailers a week. We're holding our own right around 18,000 or so. And if I was to show you this graph further out, if I was to look back over time, if I was to look back at 2019, it feels like an eternity ago, back before the COVID pandemic, back before we had all the lockdowns and all of the restart of the economy after those lockdowns, what would you see? Well, you would see that trailers are essentially right at this 18,000 to 19,000 trailer a week number. So really what we're seeing is not the beginning of the end of the trailer market. It's really just a resetting back to normal expectations, back to where we were before everything went crazy, both in the freight markets and in the wider economy. We're just resetting back to those more normal levels, those levels that we had historically seen before the pandemic, accounting for the loss of most of the Triple Crown traffic, accounting for the vagaries of parcel traffic. This is where we were hanging out, right around 18,000 to 19,000 trailers a week, and that's where we've returned to. On the container market, on a North American basis, it really shows the same trajectory as overall intermodal, which you would expect because containers are 90% of the traffic. And again, in containers, you have the same issue that we talked about with overall intermodal. Depending on what country you look at, you see a very different picture. So depending on what your route guide is set up as, where you bring goods into, determines what sort of experience you're having in the intermodal space, what sort of congestion story you're facing. Certainly, we've seen some easing on the West Coast, but there were media reports just over the last week about some of the rampant congestion now at New York, New Jersey. That is certainly something to keep an eye on, particularly as we get into the later part of June, get into the start of the contracting on the U.S. West Coast. They have a July deadline. It does not appear they're going to hit that July deadline. And so folks who import cargo need to think about that and what the possible disruption risk is in their supply chain. Certainly, it's there. Certainly, there's going to be pressure applied to keep goods moving, particularly in an election year, particularly just 4 or 5 months ahead of a midterm election. There's going to be pressure applied to the ILWU to keep things moving out there, particularly against the backdrop of all the political capital spent by the present administration about getting things moving, getting supply chains fluid, getting supply chains unstuck. Certainly, any sort of slowdown or stoppage on the West Coast that would fly in the face of that, we would make it very hard for the administration to use supply chain success as a talking point going into the election, going into the midterms for other Democrats in Congress. So that will be something that will be fascinating to watch as we go forward. Certainly, if I'm bringing goods in, I'm trying probably to avoid the West Coast just to minimize my exposure and my risk to any potential hiccups out there. It certainly would not take much of a hiccup to create issues, particularly as we head toward the peak season, particularly as we deal with the delayed cargoes out of China that are now at least somewhat headed our way. We think that as we start to digest those cargoes, we want to make sure there's nothing that creates a return to the congestion that we saw for most of 2021 at the ports as well as in the inland rail terminals. So now let's switch gears and let's talk about the carload markets. And I said, carload is really a status quo report, so we'll move through these fairly quickly because there's not a lot of change. And you can see in the carload market, we bounced up a little bit after a couple of weeks of decline. We're still below last year, below our five-year average, not really having any sort of momentum, not seeing any sort of catalyst to move higher. And economically sensitive freight is basically in the same boat. We're down below where we had been running. We're bouncing off the bottom. We are below our five-year average. We're below last year. It is something we're going to have to watch to see what happens as we move through the year. Certainly, if you look from the beginning of the year to where we are now, the trend line's up and to the right, but over the last month, that trend line's gotten much more muddy than it had been to that point. So we will definitely keep our eye on the economically sensitive freight categories. As a reminder for those of you who may not listen every week, may not get FTR reports, when we talk about economically sensitive freight, that means we exclude coal, we exclude agriculture, we exclude petroleum. We look at just those sectors that are more closely tied to underlying economic demand drivers. So in this number are things like pulp and paper, lumber and wood, metals, metal products, automotive. Those sorts of sectors are what's in this number. Now, that's also the type of freight that can more easily switch back and forth between rail and truck, depending on the shipper, depending on the receiver's capabilities or requirements. There is that ability for some of that freight to move between modes. So now let's talk about the bulk sectors. You can't really talk about the carload market without talking about coal and grain. So let's do that. Let's talk about coal. Coal over the last several weeks has really been pretty flat, trending a little bit up, essentially right in line with where we were last year, below our five-year average, but ultimately hanging in there well. When with natural gas this morning up close to $9 per MMBTU, that shouldn't surprise anybody. Certainly with the early summer we've seen across parts of Texas and the upper Midwest, again, it shouldn't surprise anybody that this number's hanging in there pretty well. We think it will continue to do that for most of 2022 before declining next year. You have an awful lot of coal plants set to come offline next year because of consent decrees with environmental agencies. So even if the economics are nominally supportive, a lot of generators aren't going to have a choice but to pull those coal-fired plants offline. Looking at grain, it's really been in the same range for the last month, and it has not moved a whole lot, and it has been very, very weak, and has been, quite frankly, surprisingly weak through the first couple of quarters of the year, quarter and a half of the year. You would have expected, with all the turmoil in Eastern Europe, you would have expected to see this number increase. You would have expected to see this number bounce a little bit. Now, that's just related to the lack of stock, the lack of grain in the bins, the lack of wheat in the bins. Canada had a very poor harvest in 2021. The U.S. had an okay harvest. It wasn't spectacular. There just isn't the inventory to go in and respond. We expect that to change as the harvest starts to come off. We expect Canada to have a robust harvest year. We expect the U.S. to follow suit. We've heard anecdotal reports that farmers really have shifted their planting right at the last minute from soybeans to wheat to other crops to try and fill in that gap. That is what we expected to have happen. The global society, and particularly North America and the United States, have never backed down from a challenge, have never allowed folks in the world to go hungry. That wasn't going to happen this time either. We expect to see this number increase dramatically once the harvest starts to come in the early part of the next quarter, the early part of that third quarter. Chemicals traffic. Chemicals has been the bright spot. Over these last 18 months, chemicals traffic has been the consistent volume gainer across the carload sector, and that has continued. We had a down week 2 weeks ago that brought us right back to our five-year average. We bounced right back to where we had been running in the latest week, right back to where we were last year. We expect chemicals traffic to keep up this slow and steady growth pace right around 3% for most of the year. We don't expect to see any deviation from that, even as natural gas prices have increased, even as prices have gone up for the feedstock that is used in a lot of those chemical processes. Petroleum products jumped in the latest week. we had seen really since the post-pandemic period in July, August of 2020, we had seen petroleum products really just hold within 19,000 to 20,000 carloads a week. We broke out and broke out a big way in the latest week, above our five-year average, above last year, close to 21,000 carloads a week. But let's wait and see. Let's see if that's just 1 week, if it comes right back down, or if we continue to hold at these elevated levels for an extended period of time. So wait and see on petroleum products for now. Certainly a big jump in the latest week. Stone, sand, and gravel, a little bit of a decline in the latest week, back essentially to where it was at this time last year, below its five-year average. The five-year average, sort of like in coal, is not necessarily a sustainable number. It's not necessarily where this commodity was going to get back to when you think of all the drilling sand that is in this number on a five-year average basis. The five-year period includes the drilling boom, includes when the sand was moving in mass from Wisconsin into the drilling fields of Texas and other places. We're not going to see those numbers necessarily get achieved again, but we are going to keep our eye to see what is sustainable as we go forward through the year. Lumber and wood bounced back in the latest week, but still below its five-year average, still well below last year. We'll have to see. It's trended up over the course of 2022. The recent pop in the last week gets us back to those high water marks, in range of those high water marks that we've had for most of the year. We'll have to see what happens. We'll have to see whether this is durable. Mortgage rates have gone up. The Fed basically signaled this week that mortgage rates and interest rates in general are going to go up further over the next couple of months. What will that do to housing demand? What will that do to lumber and wood? We'll just have to wait and see. Certainly, potential for downside ahead for lumber and wood. Pulp and paper increased dramatically in the last week, but really that was just a recovery from a down week 2 weeks ago, getting us back to where we had been over the last month. A little bit above our five-year average, above last year, but a lot of volatility over the year. This number has moved around quite a bit. It's bounced off a very low level. We'll have to see if it can stay here as we go through the balance of the year. In the automotive markets, a little bit of an increase in the latest week, a little bit essentially in line with its five-year average. We would expect to see this number increase dramatically once the automotive sector gets its supply chain issues figured out. We don't expect at this point that to be a 2022 event. We expect to see that inflect next year noticeably positive. Until then, at or below the five-year average for automotive as we think about it over the balance of the year. So, some key takeaways as we finish up this week is that intermodal has held firm, but all countries are not all countries are not particularly created equal. If you're in Canada, you're seeing volumes move up. In the U.S., you're seeing volumes really hold flat. Carloads a lot less positive than intermodal. And the service issues that have plagued the carriers over the last 18 months really show no signs of abating in the near term. And that's something that we're going to have to work through as an industry, particularly as we get toward the peak season later this year. And with that, I want to thank everybody for watching this week. As always, I'm your host, Todd Chernowski, the Vice President of Rail and Intermodal here at FTR. Reach at any time if we can be of assistance with any of your transportation information needs. We'd love to talk about this stuff. Reach out to myself at any point. Have a great week. We'll talk to you again next week.
That's it for this week's Rail Market Update on the State of Freight podcast. The Rail Market Update will be published each week along with a downloadable PDF of the presentation. If you find this transportation intelligence useful, please take a moment to give us a positive rating on your podcast platform of choice and send us your feedback by email at podcast@ftrintel.com. You can find more publicly available State of Freight content and download the PDF of today's presentation by going to www.ftrintel.com/podcast. FTR is the leader in freight transportation forecasting in North America, providing consistently reliable reports for trucking, rail, and intermodal transportation, as well as providing demand analysis for commercial vehicle and rail car. For more information about the work of FTR, visit www.ftrintel.com or call us at 888-988-1699 to find out which publications will best support your business.